Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silly Cast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Saturday, June 13th, 2009, and this is show number 209. Well, you're probably wondering why I showed up in your feed a day early, aren't you? Well, it turns out we're going to Lindsay's college graduation tomorrow. Yay! If I may brag for just a moment, she's graduating with a degree in biochem with a minor in Spanish in 4 years. Who gets out in 4 years these days? And she got a minor, too. Can you believe that? She took 8 AP classes in high school and passed all the tests, and her university actually took all 8 as credit towards classes, which is kind of unusual. It turns out that way she was able to cram in 9 extra classes to get the minor in Spanish. I'm amazed at her. She's worked so hard and deserves all of the rewards of her hard work. Now, my son Kyle is no slouch either. He's graduating from high school now, and he's already been accepted to a university to study chemical engineering. I know what you guys are thinking. Let's take after Steve, both kids, right? Well, come on, I'm a pretty good brain myself, but I must admit that chemistry was my worst class in high school. I couldn't stand the stuff. Steve loved chemistry, so I guess I've got to give him some credit for the kids here. All right, enough bragging about my kids. Let's get to work. Well, this week, I got a ton of dumb questions. I don't know, 4, 5, 10, 12, I don't know, a whole bunch of them. People came out of the woodwork on them this week. Unfortunately, because I had to get the show done a day early, I didn't get to any of them. I promise I'm going to work on them for next week, though, guys. Luckily, Phil Bridges came up with a solution to a dumb question from last week. So, since I don't have to do any work for this one except read, let me read you his email. Michael Hayes was asking how he could download a Mac update via Wi-Fi onto an iPod Touch and transfer it to his Mac later. Bart reckoned you couldn't do this without jailbreaking. Turns out you can do this on an unjailbroken Touch using a great little application called iStorage from istorageapp.com. It has its own nifty little browser that will let you download stuff from the good old interweb. iStorage also sports a groovy file explorer that you can manipulate stuff with once you've downloaded it, and various methods to move data back and forth to a Mac or PC using WebDAV or FTP. WebDAV is easiest because you can access your Touch's doc folder via Mac or PC web browser. I stumbled across this little puppy some time ago because I wanted to use a Touch to display locally stored imagery-based mapping, something Safari on the Touch refuses to do. iStorage's browser will read local content stored on the Touch, creating the illusion of a lightning-fast web connection. It's £349 here in the UK, so probably $6 or something like that in the US. He also gave us the iTunes link to that, so we can download that ourselves. Well, Phil, this is fantastic! What a great tool! And the price is certainly right. You know, I love the NoSilicast community. It's so much easier we can use the Borg Mind collective here, and we don't have to depend on me, of all people, to know everything. That's a good thing, right? Well, I appreciate you taking the time to write this up and do such a great explanation in order to help Michael. Well, over the years, I've told you about different tools to create panoramic images from carefully taken photos. And my favorite for years has actually been the HP Panorama Stitcher, which was buried inside an HP printer driver. The last time I found it, it was in the HP OfficeJet G-Series 7.3.1 driver. It was free, which of course was a compelling reason to try it, but more importantly, it automatically made beautiful panoramas with hardly any work on my part at all. It even kept more of the photo than using Photoshop Elements, and it was much more forgiving about changing exposures, say, on the sky. Photoshop Elements would leave bands of darkness between the images that was really hard to blend out by hand, but HP Panorama Stitcher had no trouble with that at all. Now, you might be wondering why I'm telling you all of this again when you could just go back to show number 105 and listen or read it again. Well, sadly, something changed in OS X, and now when I run this great tool, the panorama image comes out pure black. I even had Lindsay try it out, and while it worked great before for her, now it fails for her too. I've been searching for a replacement now for about a year, and when Don McAllister joined Steve and I for our Catalina adventure, he was trying out an open-source panorama application tool called Hugin. That's H-U-G-I-N. He and I played with it for a bit, but it kept taking one image and flipping it 90 degrees, and it was really dodgy to use, so I gave up on it. That is, until out of the blue, my friend Craig Betts, who has a website called BetsSoftware.com, happened to mention Huggin to me and how great it works. I was really surprised since we'd had some problems with it. So he walked me through how he had used it, and wouldn't you know, it works fantastic. I'd missed a few subtleties, and with Craig pointing out what I'd missed, it really was flawless. So let me start at the beginning. Huggin is available for free at huggin.sourceforge.net. Again, it only has one G. Maybe it's Huggin. Anyway, it's even cross-platform. There's versions for Mac OS X, Linux, and Windows. Don't you just love open source software? One thing you don't get with open source software normally is a pretty nice-looking interface, but Huggin actually looks pretty good. The workflow is a little odd, which is why I had some problems, but I'll show you where I messed up so you'll have smooth sailing. Huggin has icons across the top for typical things like new, open, save, and save as, along with some redo, undo buttons. There's also some more advanced controls, but we'll skip those for now. Under that row of icons, you have a set of tabs. The first tab is probably the most important one, because it's the assistant. The assistant is your friend. When you're confused, come right back to the assistant. That was my big mistake. I viewed these tabs going across the top as the natural progression of the workflow, but the assistant is what actually drives the workflow if you let it be in control. I should have figured that out since they even have step numbers on the assistant tab. So it says, step one, load images. Even I couldn't mess this part out. So you click the button, select the images. Okay, so far so good. After you select the images, Huggin will give you some info on your lens. In my case, the Nikon D40 evidently has a normal rectilinear lens with a focal length of 30 millimeters and a focal length multiplier of 1.5. I'm sure I've heard Bart say that before, but I'm not 100% clear on why this is actually important. Craig said that he has some mutant camera, so he actually had to look these things up and enter those numbers himself because the panoramas came out looking really weird before he did that, distorted, I guess. All right, step two, back in the assistant, says align. This step is actually really fun. Perhaps more fun if it did it automatically like the HP software did, but it's still kind of entertaining. When you click the align button, you may get an error that says auto pano sift not found. Please specify a valid path in the references. Craig, Don, and I all ignored this without any ill effects. I got a second error too, but it was really telling me about the next step. So, next you're presented with the first two images in your series, one on the left, one on the right. The assistant has actually taken you to the Control Points tab. The idea here is that you're going to help the software understand how to line up the images. With any luck, you were smart enough to take the pictures with significant overlap. I try to do about a third of it overlapped on the image each time. So, you find a spot that's in both images, and you click on it once in each image, once on the left one, once in the right. That sets what's called a control point. One mistake I made here was not paying attention to the messages that come up when you do that. When you click on the images, it makes this cool square that has blown up pixels so you can tell if you nailed the exact right spot. Make sure they look the same, and then click the Add button in the lower right. Like I said, for a control freak like me, this was really fun to be able to say, this boat lines up with that boat. Once you get three or four control points in, oh wait, I should explain. So I said pay attention to what it's saying because sometimes it's telling you, hey, those two points don't really look alike. If you get that, that's if you've messed up. So you do want to pay attention, and that's what I didn't do the first time. Well, once you get three or four control points in, click the right arrow in the upper right, and it'll slide the second photo to the left and add your third photo. Add your control points on this combination and keep going until all your photos are lined up. Like I said, about three or four is plenty on each photo. If you don't do enough, I think that's when the photo can get rotated 90 degrees because it spins about one of those control points or something. I think that's where Don might have messed his up. By the way, I have a sneaking suspicion that if I did figure out that auto pano sift thingy in the earliest error message, I might not have to do the control points at all. But it's kind of fun to have this level of control. The more anal you are in these steps, the better your panoramas will look. Now, remember our cardinal rule right now, always go back to the assistant. Don't be tempted by those other buttons. It's scary out there in those other buttons. Back on the assistant, it tells you how many control points you have, and for some reason, mine also said, images or control points have changed, new alignment is needed. So the align button is the only highlighted button on the page, so I clicked it. This brought up a really, really ugly preview of my panorama. When Craig and I looked at it together, luckily he was observant enough to notice that there was a major janky spot in the alignment of one of the photos, so he suggested I go back and check some of my control points. And sure enough, remember I said there were points that I had clicked and it actually said there was an error? Well, I had clicked a rather ambiguous spot, and sliding that spot around and aligning again gave me a perfect-looking preview. Now, back in the preview I put in the show notes, I want you to notice how distinctly different the sky color is in the last image. It's a grayish white while the other images are very blue. It looks dreadful in the preview. But don't worry, Huggin will automatically fix all of that. The other thing I didn't worry about was all of the options you can play with on almost every screen. For example, on this preview screen, you can change the projection from the default of cylindrical to rectilinear, equirectilinear, even Mercator and more. Whatever those things even mean. There's pulldowns for blend mode and output, LDR versus HDR, and some number you can enter for the EV. Again, no matter what those things are, I didn't touch any of these controls, because I have no clue what they are. Back on the main screen, I also didn't go into Optimizer, Exposure, or Stitcher, all of which have had about 2,387 different options you could set. Remember what I said about the assistant being your friend. You don't have to touch any of those buttons because you go back to the assistant for step 3. This is the amazing, difficult, incredibly complicated process of clicking the button that says, Create Panorama. I know I made this sound really long, but you get the idea. You pull your images in, click on some matching points in the images so they can be lined up well, and shazam, you've got a beautiful panorama. I guess I should mention that the image you get in the end is a TIFF file, so it's huge because it's uncompressed. My file was 30 megabytes with only 4 photos that are overlapped by a third each. The resulting image also has some roundy edges in it, so I cropped mine in over in preview, saved it out as a JPEG, and it was only 2.1 megabytes. I put my masterpiece in the show notes so you could see how lovely it looks. And let's see, I guess I should mention that Huggin doesn't just do a panorama of a set of horizontal photos. You can take a grid of images and stitch those together, too, to make a huge panorama. I really should get around to trying that, too. If you'd like to learn more about this amazing, free, and open-source cross-platform tool, check out their tutorials at huggin.sf.net/tutorials. And as always, of course, there's links in the show notes and pictures and images. It's all kinds of fun over there. Or you could download and buy the $3 Pano application for iPhone from Debacle Software, which lets you take shots with the iPhone camera and stitches them together for you automatically right there on the iPhone. It really works well. Kyle turned me on to it, and I put a cool panorama in that he took in the show notes so you can see how great it works, even with a cruddy iPhone camera. I mean, this thing is, it actually looks really good. I'm really surprised. Okay, so I'm all fat, dumb, and happy with my Huggin review, thanks to Don for turning me on to it. And I'm so over worrying about that HP Panorama Stitcher software not working. It was good while it lasted, but you know what? I've moved on. So then this morning, I'm doing my morning jog down on the beach, listening to Tim Verporten's Mac Reviewcast as always, when the ever-lovely Gazmaz comes on with a review of a panorama stitching application. Well, of course, I'm all ears as he describes his adventure trying to find a good application. In the end, he goes to Bart Bouchatz, who tells him to use the HP Panorama Stitcher. Somehow, he forgets to mention in his review that Bart learned that about that application from me. I'm not sure if Bart forgot to tell Gazmaz or Gazmaz just forgot to mention it, but I'm okay with that. Anyway, I'm having a quiet smile, realizing that he'll be defeated in this path because it simply does not work on the latest version of Mac OS X. So next, Gaz describes how it doesn't work. Yeah, I knew that. But instead of sitting back and pouting as I did, he goes online and he finds a forum discussing how it doesn't work, but how there is a new application from HP that does work. It's still part of a printer driver and it's still free. What? No, you gotta be kidding me. Well, the software is called HP PhotoSmart Essential 3.5, and it's touted as a free photo editing, organizing, printing, and sharing application. Gaz goes on to explain that if you open this huge piece of software, which, by the way, is available for Mac and Windows, you'll find a button or a tab in the software to an application called Stitch. And in there, in all its glory, is my beloved HP Panorama software, reborn as though a phoenix from the ashes. So I jumped on my Mac when I got home, all sweaty from my run, and I did a search for HP on my laptop. I figured since I had a very recently installed printer driver for my new HP printer, and sure enough, there is an application right on my Mac called HP Photomart Stitch. And yes, it's the same application. I dragged in the same four images I used before, clicked next, and bam, there's my panorama. Remember how I had to painstakingly align 12 control points using Huggin? Now I'm a control freak and I did enjoy that, but there's nothing like that in this application. I thought this couldn't look that good when it's done though, right? Well, I opened the image in preview and I found one teeny tiny little spot in the mountain ridge where it was off a tiny bit. In fact, coincidentally, right about where I messed it up when I did it by hand and Huggin the first time. This application is amazing. Even the sky discontinuity I thought the applications would have trouble with looked fantastic. I put the panorama from HP Photomart Stitch in the show notes too, so you can compare it to the one from Huggin. Has anybody noticed how hard it is for me to say Photosmart Stitch right after saying panorama? Boy, those words are hard to put together. Anyway, I noticed something else. The HP Photosmart Stitch software made a much higher resolution image. It came out 7744 by 1968, while the Huggin panorama was 5246 by 1310. I didn't have to do any cropping at all with the HP software, but Huggin did give me the choice of an uncompressed TIFF image, so that's an advantage too. I'm so excited to have two good choices now. One for the control freak, and like I said, I must admit I enjoyed the control of Huggin, and then the HP Photosmart Stitch software when you just want to bang it out. Thanks to Gazmez for the hot tip, and of course, there's a link in the show notes to the HP Photosmart Stitch software too. Whew, I got it out. I said it right once. So you guys know how much I love screen steps. I love it so much that I actually asked Greg and Trevor myself if I could advertise it to you. ScreenSteps gives you the easiest way on the planet to create gorgeous documentation with text, screen captures, and annotations. What amazes me, though, is that even though these guys are on the top of the game, they keep taking it up a notch to do more. They just released version 2.5 a little bit ago, and now they've announced that version 2.6, which is in preview right now, will support Office OpenXML. That means you can not only export your documents in PDF and HTML for direct publishing, but you can also export them for editing in Microsoft Word, Pages, and other word processors. How cool is that? Personally, I'd rather edit in almost anything but Microsoft Word, but I know a lot of people out there, and maybe you're one of them, are much more comfortable in Word than any other application. But if you've been toying with the idea of buying ScreenSteps Pro, but haven't gotten off the dime and got it done, now is the time to do it, because the price is going up $20 on Wednesday to $79.95. If you buy the Pro version now using my coupon code, NOSILLA, that's my name spelled backwards in all capital letters, then you'll get Pro for the price of a non-NOSILLACast listener would get the standard version. Greg told me that ScreenSteps Standard is really becoming a tool for bloggers, while ScreenSteps Pro is a tool for people who have to assemble their stuff into manuals. So Standard will stay at the low price of $39.95, and of course you can get 25% off of the standard price with the coupon code too. Check out ScreenSteps at ScreenSteps.com. Well, Donald Burr is back with another one of his fantastic reviews, so let's give a listen.
Hi, everybody. Donald Burr of Otakuno Podcast, back after a long hiatus with another of my famous reviews. Did you miss me? So here's the problem. I've got a MacBook Pro. It's a great laptop. It's the one I take with me when I go on vacation, and it's also the one I take with me to job sites when I need a machine with power. But for a general purpose, walk around town, waiting at doctor's offices, check your email, hanging out at coffee shops type machine, it's a bit overkill. So I was in the market for a small, lightweight machine that I could use just for basic internet surfing tasks and email. Sounds like the perfect job for a netbook. Now, I've used netbooks before. My girlfriend has an Asus E that she loves. The problem with that is that it's a bit small, both in terms of screen size and keyboard size. I also needed one with an Express card slot to work with my Express card Evdo wireless card. And after quite a bit of research, I finally settled on the Lenovo IdeaPad S10. The IdeaPad is definitely a well-built machine. It feels solid. It doesn't creak or make any other weird sounds when I press down on it. It's about 7 by 10 by 1 inch thick, which is about the size of a typical hardback book. So it's very portable, and it weighs less than 3 pounds. It has a 10-inch LED backlit LCD screen with a resolution of 1024 by 600. This screen size is big enough to render most websites without the need to scroll horizontally. It also has a keyboard that they say is 85% the size of a normal keyboard. For me, this actually works out pretty good. It didn't take me very long to get used to it. However, there are two annoyances with it. The first one is that the right shift key is half the size of the other shift key. This was done to make room for the up arrow key. So as a result, when I hit right shifts, a lot of times I end up hitting up arrow instead, which is really annoying. I would have preferred it if Lenovo shrank the arrow keys to half their size to make room for a normally sized right shift key. Also, the back tick and tilde key is awkwardly placed in the top row of function keys, but I use that key so infrequently that it's not really that much of a bother. The rest of the keyboard works beautifully. Now, if you had meaty man hands, you might have some trouble with it, but for my normal, fairly average-sized hands, it works perfectly. It has a touchpad with built-in scroll functions. However, the touchpad is a bit on the small side and may annoy some people. I don't mind it for regular web surfing or email-type tasks, but if I need more precise cursor control, I usually end up plugging in a USB mouse. I would have preferred it if, instead of a touchpad, Lenovo put in one of their TrackPoint devices. These are the little rubber pencil erasers things found in the middle of the keyboard on Lenovo laptops. Now, when this subject comes up on an internet discussion, it's usually violent and bloody, and there's two sides of the conflict, the side that hates them to death and the side that absolutely loves the IBM TrackPoint. I happen to be on that side. I love the TrackPoint. It's perfect. You give it a little nudge, it moves the cursor a little bit, you slam it all the way to left or right, and the cursor goes flying across the screen. It's perfect. I really wish Lenovo would have used a TrackPoint device in the IdeaPad. This machine uses the new Intel Atom processor running at 1.6 GHz. This is a new low-power CPU designed for netbook-type applications. It uses a lot less power and generates a lot less heat than your typical Intel desktop or even notebook CPU. This is great because the machine doesn't get very hot at all, unlike my MacBook Pro, which can substitute as my room heater during the winter months. I mean, that thing gets so hot I can't even put it on my lap. And even if I could, I wouldn't want to because, you know, who knows what damage it might be doing to, you know, the organs down there. And I want to have kids at some point. It comes with 1 gig of RAM standard, but it can be easily upgraded to 2 gigs. And I did so, and it was really cheap. It was only about $25. RAM is cheap nowadays. It also has a 160-gig SATA hard drive, which also can be easily upgraded. Both the RAM and the hard drive are easily accessible by just unscrewing 2 screws and removing a bottom access panel. This presents some interesting future upgrade options. Solid-state drive, anyone? I might want to think about that. It uses the Intel GMA950 graphics accelerator, which is fine for text, internet, and some lightweight games. You wouldn't want to be playing Quake or anything on it, though, so this is not a gamer's laptop. But again, this is a netbook. That is not within the design specifications, so that's fine. It comes with Windows XP Home, which is fine. The only bloatware that it comes with was Norton Internet Security 360, which of course I immediately removed and replaced with the free Avast antivirus. Other than that, there's no real other bloatware on the system. Of course, if you're a Linux geek, or even if you're not, you might want to look at Ubuntu. They just released a brand new Netbook Remix edition of their operating system. It looks really sweet, and it's pretty easy to install, and it runs great on the IdeaPad. It has 2 USB 2 ports and an SD card slot, which is handy for pulling pictures off a digital camera or whatnot. And, of course, it has the Express card slot, which works great with my EVDO modem. It also has 802.11b and G Wi-Fi, as well as Bluetooth, so you can hook up to Wi-Fi access points or tether to your Bluetooth cell phone if you've got that feature. But I've saved the best for last. This machine's battery life. In one word, insane. They advertise anywhere between 4 and 6 hours of battery life, and I get that, even with Wi-Fi or EVDO. I can literally take this machine with me at the beginning of the day, use it, you know, off and on throughout the day, and it'll last the whole day. I am really impressed with the battery life on this thing. It's available at Amazon for $3.99, and you might be able to find it cheaper elsewhere as well. Overall, I am very pleased with this machine. It's lightweight, easy to carry, fits my needs perfectly, and the battery life is awesome. I give it 4 out of 5. You can get more information about it at Lenovo's website, which I'm sure Allison will put in the show notes. Hope you enjoyed the review, and see you next time. Psst. Word on the street is also that you can put OS X on it, and it'll run as a Hackintosh, and it runs quite well for that purpose. But don't tell them I said that, okay?
Well, thank you so much, Donald. I love your reviews. You give such a great insight into the real use of a tool, and you add a little humor in there, too. I put a link to the Lenovo, the S10, over at Amazon, so if Donald's convinced you to check it out, click on the link. One of my pet peeves in the blogosphere is that so many podcaster bloggers spend so much time on redesigning their sites. If I have a green border or a blue border, does that provide any value to you? Just like Drobo, now all the podcasters are advertising about Squarespace, and now we all start thinking, oh, well, maybe I need Squarespace too. They're so good at these ads, they're so compelling, they really make us feel like we're not doing a good job if we don't check it out. If we don't go to Squarespace where we can do all these changes. So seductive, aren't they? Well, I was listening to MacBreak Weekly a while ago, and Alex Lindsay was talking about how cool it was that he could just slide all these things and these components around and tweak this and tweak that, and he sounded so excited about it. And then again, I thought, how does that help his customers if he's always fiddling around with it? You know, I've had offers to redesign my website, and I've politely refused because of two things. Number one, I really like my design. And number two, I think branding is important. I think it's important that you can find things you're used to finding and identify with the site when you land there. One thing I want to make clear is that nothing I've said here is a slam on Squarespace in any way. From the testimonials from non-advertisers I've been hearing, it's fabulous. I just want people to keep in focus what changes add value to your customers, that's the people who navigate to your blog, and what changes are just fun for you to do. If fun for you is your primary objective, then fiddle away to your heart's content. But realize what you're doing if you change things too often. All right, why did I bring all this up? I'll tell you. It's because some of the functionality of my website has just not been working the way I think you deserve. One of the things that has bugged me is how long my right sidebar is getting. But there's just so much darn good content in there. I want to tell you about all of it. Well, the one that really bugged me was important links. I have, you know, about me in there, how to subscribe, Honda Bob stuff, and all the tutorials I've been writing. But every time I write another tutorial, that sidebar, just that section of important links, gets a little bit longer. I believe all this content provides a lot of value, but why does it have to take up so much space? So I put that question to research assistant Niraj, whose middle name is actually, there's a plugin for that. You see, he's the master of plugins for WordPress. I asked him for some way that the upper level links, like tutorials, could maybe have some sort of pull down to get to the ones that are subservient to it. Without even having to whip out his trusty BlackBerry, he said, WPDTree is what you need. Okie dokie, I do what I'm told, right? I went online, searched for it, downloaded the file from WordPress.org. I uploaded it to my website, and I turned it on in WordPress, and it didn't look like anything had changed at first. Well, I don't want to take you through all the gruesome details, but Niraj has some sort of sixth sense about WordPress plugins. I showed it to him. I showed him how it wasn't actually working, and he instantly pointed out the problem. Well, the good news is that now, if you look at my right sidebar, it's nice and neat and compact. But you have little cool pull-downs to get you to this all the same great NoSilicast goodness. You can click on Open All if you like, and you'll see the big long strip just like the old days. Tired of it? Click Close All. Beautiful. Another beauty of this is that my small efforts to provide income to the NoSilicast are now above the fold. You can see my shiny Donate Now button, the Screen Steps button, and my Amazon affiliate link. If you want to click any of those, you know, it wouldn't hurt my feelings in any way, shape, or form. If you want to buy something on Amazon anyway, why not search for it there and let me get a small bit of change to go back into the NoSilicast coffers and not cost yourself a dime more money? Everybody wins. Anyway, go out and check out the new and improved right sidebar and let me know if it makes things better for you. Well, it's time for another testimonial about Honda Bob from his loyal customers from his 30-year picnic. Now you don't have to take my word for it. You can listen to Susan and Becky. All right, next up we have Susan Smith and Becky Anderson. So, Susan, how long have you known Honda Bob?
It's got to be 15 plus years.
Wow, and how many Hondas is he taking care of for you in that length of time?
You know what? Three.
Three? All right.
I keep him a long time now. I haven't had a Honda yet that hasn't had 150,000 miles at least on.
Holy cow, so you drive a long ways too.
I just keep my cars till they're dead.
Well,
they're not dead. I just get sick of them, so I have to get a new one.
But you can because of Honda Bob, right?
Exactly. It keeps my cars going great. My current car has 175,000 miles on it.
Wow.
It's a 98, and of course it's 2009. So.
Wow. Well, see, we drive our cars so little, we sell them in 11 or 12 years, but they only have like 60, 70,000 miles on them.
That's a good buy for somebody.
All right, Becky, how long have you known Honda Bob?
Just, what, about a couple of months.
Since December.
In December, I guess.
Yes. Oh, okay. So you're new to him. Have you gotten used to his sense of humor?
I love it. It makes my day and the peace of mind with the assurance of the quality, good job. Don't have to leave my house. It's awesome.
Oh, can you even imagine ever again going to some slimy car dealer and sitting on those linoleum chairs reading 12-year-old copies of Field and Stream?
It's been so long, I forgot about those horrible experiences.
I won't ever buy another kind of car.
No, I won't either, actually.
I got to admit, I was kind of lusting after a Toyota, the new Toyota Camry, the hybrid. It's really sexy, but I felt like I was cheating on Bob or something.
And you didn't buy it.
No, I didn't buy it. I just looked. All right, well, thanks for getting
beer at the picnic.
Oh, there you go. Well, nice talking to you guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, I love that you guys can hear those testimonials in their own words and not have to just believe me. Remember that you, too, can keep your Honda or Acura running smoothly for 175,000 miles like Susan by calling Honda Bob at 562-531-2321 or sending him an email at hdabob@aol.com. The only catch is that you have to live in the L.A. or Orange County areas. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with the one and only Bart Bouchatz from BartB.ie, not the substitute Belgian, but the real Belgian Irishman. How are you today, Bart?
I'm good. Weather's good here, so I'm in a good mood.
Oh, blah, blah, blah. It's misty and cold, disgusting here. You took my weather again.
Well, if it helps, they're giving a forecast of thunder and lightning.
So, all right.
Does that make you feel better?
I do. I feel a little bit better. How did you like Nightwise as the standing in Belgian there?
I thought it was really good, actually. I really enjoyed listening back to it. It's nice, actually, when you hear an Oscillacast for the first time on a Monday. It's like something to look forward to.
That's right. You haven't had that in a long time. Now that you listen to you're on the live show, you don't get that
anymore.
Yeah,
it's just the occasional segment you don't hear when you're listening live.
Right. Well, we should probably get started. It is nice to have you back. Glad to have you in the good inner tubes. So why don't we start out with Security Light?
Yes, it was the second Tuesday of the month. Therefore, all your Windows machines must be patched.
Yay.
It was a big load, truckload of them, as per usual, for both Office and for Windows itself, and also for Mac Office. But I was not able to verify, and I did try, whether or not the PowerPoint Zero Day was actually fixed by this. And
okay.
none of the stuff from Microsoft mentions PowerPoint.
Oh, bummer.
And
so
nothing
keep,
I've
keep
read
not
on
using
the web
PowerPoint,
mentions
right?
it either.
Hmm? Keep not using PowerPoint, too.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's my objectives, as we have mentioned before. On the Office on Mac upgrades, was it patches to just the 2008 to the new one or to 2004 as well? Do you know?
From what I remember reading, it was both.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good. Oh, back on the death to PowerPoint march, somebody sent me a link to an Israeli general who has declared that PowerPoint reduces inventive thought and good analysis and that they should stop using it.
Woo!
I had an opportunity to do a presentation the other day and I was just like, oh man, I got to use PowerPoint. I don't want to. And then I just thought, why do I really have to use PowerPoint? What is it about PowerPoint that I have to use? Why do I have to be in an 8.5 by 11 square or rectangle? Why would that have to be true? And I thought, well, what happens if I just write up everything in the wiki? And I mean, I can put, you know, little bullets in and that kind of thing, little headings, you know. And what I found was I didn't spend time trying to figure out what should be on which page. You know, you're always going, oh, I want to get all this information on one page, but it's too much, so I better split it. Where do I split it? And, you know, changing the font size to get it to fit and, you know, taking words out so it doesn't wrap. And none of that adds value to your customer, the person watching your presentation. And I was talking to Niraj about it, and he says, well, yeah, but you don't want them reading ahead. And I said, why? Why don't I want them reading ahead? What is it in my control freak personality that says that I have to control when they read? You know, and I found another thing online, a study that was done that looked at animations that, that bring the bullets in one at a time. And they, they took a bunch of people and had them look at the same presentation and then tested them on how well they understood the information. And by and large, the group that saw the presentation where all of the bullets came on the page at the same time versus the group that saw them come in as animations one at a time, the people that saw them all at once had higher comprehension of the material.
Sure. I find it really annoying when I can't actually scan ahead to the next paragraph or whatever, the next bullet.
But somehow it's this thing in presenters that they want you to absorb the information when they want you to absorb it, instead of having them understand everything you said.
And as far as I believe in the golden rule of presentations, tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them what you told them. You can't possibly have the information go in too many times.
Right. But if they read ahead, somehow people think they're not going to listen to what you're saying. They're going to be reading the next part. So don't.
Okay, but that's if you write essays instead of bullets.
Yeah.
Which is the other thing that goes horribly wrong in presentations, where they actually write every single word they're going to say to you, and they read it off the slide with you. And I mean, I can read. I'm a grown-up. Stop that.
Well, that's another thing that I did in doing this presentation was I did it in the wiki, but I did put in full sentences because now it's a document that we can refer back to that you don't have to hear me say it. But when I talked to it, I didn't read it word for word. I knew what the content was, and I spoke to it. I got that presentation. It probably would have been about 15 pages maybe in PowerPoint, and it had Excel files and little tables and graphics and stuff. I probably put that thing together in 15 minutes. That would have taken me well over an hour in PowerPoint because I would have been screwing around with the fonts and all that. So we just got to get out of this box and stop thinking in that rectangle. I think it's bad for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Pagination is a purely arbitrary thing. Why waste our time?
Exactly. All right, let's see. What else did we get this week in Security Light?
Let me see. So Microsoft went on a big patching spree, and Adobe decided that they'd join in the fun. So on the same day, they released a bunch of stuff for their PDF-related products. So I installed those if I was unfortunate enough to be using any of Adobe's products.
Ah, good.
And then Apple jumped in with Safari 4 coming out, which, although they made a big deal about everything else about Safari 4, what they didn't make much of a deal about in the keynote is that it also fixes a bunch of security issues with Safari 3. So you should update just for those.
Okay, now I understood a lot of non-fringe people are having some serious problems with Safari 4. Tim Verporten was having all kinds of borkiness.
I'm having borkiness. If I want to crash Safari 4, these are the steps I need to do to make it crash. 1, go to apple.com. 2, click store. 3, crash.
Really?
Repeat it 100,000 times.
Have you pushed that little bug button for them?
Every time.
So they didn't test it on the store. That's, you're securely borked.
No. There's no such thing as securely borked. Anything you can make crash, the chances are it can be developed into an exploit.
Okay, so why do I want to upgrade to Safari 4 again?
Because it fixes known problems and introduces some unknown problems.
Okay.
If Apple have patched them, they're easier to reverse engineer than if we just know that we can cause a crash.
Okay, I'll get right on that one, Bort. That'll be my high... Bart, did I just call you Bort? I'll get right on that, Bart. I will make that my highest priority.
Yeah, just let it come in whenever it wants to. On the plus side, the tabs are in the right place again.
Ah, that's good. There is that. Well, did I just hear you mention WWDC, Bart? Did you want to talk about that?
No. Never again.
What was it? Monday you were up for 24 hours straight, I think you said?
Pretty much, yeah. I had to get up. I was at my parents' last weekend to go vote, and then I had to come back to Manus where I work, and I had to get a lift out with my brother, and he starts work at 7:30 in the morning, and he well, lives about 2 hours away. So basically I was up for 5 o'clock, I think it was about 4:30, 5:30. And then I was up all day, and then the keynote came out, and then we had to record an IMP live, and then we had to record a Mac Roundtable live, and it was after 3 o'clock before I was back in bed again.
Oh, jeez. You sounded fairly intelligent. You didn't sound delirious at all, but I bet you were a basket case on Tuesday.
My brain was completely frazzled. I couldn't even remember the word Death Star when I was trying to describe the AT&T logo. I could call it a Star Destroyer.
I like it. All right, so no more about the keynote. Let's move on. Let's see. So you had some interesting Mac Mini adventures you wanted to tell us about this week.
Yeah, this all started about a month or so ago, and the better half decided that he would like to develop for the iPhone, and I thought this was a very good idea. So I encouraged that path of action. So
especially if it can make
SDK.
You money, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, in recessionary times, these are good things.
Right.
So we downloaded the SDK and tried to install it on his G5 iMac, and it went, I'm sorry, you have to have an Intel Mac to install this. Poopy. So after much thinking and humming and hawing, we decided that we could stretch to a new Mac Mini because we had a keyboard, monitor, mouse, etc. So we went ahead and we ordered a Mac Mini. We didn't fill it up with as much RAM as I would have done, because we were trying to keep the budget down. So we went for 2 gigs of RAM instead of 4, which is, in fairness, is still enough. At some stage, I'll be brave enough to break open the Mini and stick in the extra 2 gigs.
Don't forget to invest in a putty knife to do that, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm still scared of it, but better half thinks it's no problem, so he can break his own iMac, or sorry, Mac Mini open to stick in a putty knife. But so we ordered it, thought it was fine. All the monitors we have are VGA, but I wasn't worried because my Mac Mini has been driving VGAs for years, and I have a whole bunch of adapters anyway, so I really didn't think to be much of an issue. So the Mini arrived, and of course the two ports on the back are Mini DVI and Mini DisplayPort, but it does come with an adapter to turn Mini DVI into DVI.
Oh, that was good of them.
Yeah, I thought that's fine. I have lots of DVI adapters, DVI to VGA, and they're all made by Apple, so I didn't see there would be any problem. Except for the fact that they physically don't fit into each other.
No, you didn't just get mixed up with male-female stuff, did you hear?
Oh, no. No, okay. The pins do not line up. Many of them do, but not all of them.
Okay, so different kinds of DVI?
I had never come across this before, so a little bit of Wikipedia later, I discovered that there are multiple types of DVI. So when Apple say a DVI adapter, they don't really mean a DVI adapter. They used to mean a DVI-I adapter, and now they mean a DVI-D adapter. And the two are not compatible with each other.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Yeah, so what I actually found out is there's DVI-A, which is analog, DVI-D, which is digital, and DVI-I, which is both analog and digital, or analog or digital.
Wait a minute, DVI-A? So it's a digital adapter that's analog? Isn't that an oxymoron?
Yeah, it's an oxymoron, yeah. But basically, DVI-A was the first one where they were basically allowing you to run analog signals over this new futuristic connector so that you could be using the right connector even if you weren't yet with the right technology. I mean, and VGA is analog, remember?
Right. Okay.
So, and then there was DVI-D, which is obviously digital signal over DVI. And to make things easy at the start, the adapters were all DVI-I, were intermediate, which had the appropriate holes for everything.
So
the female should always be DVI-I, and then you can stick whatever DVI into it you want.
Okay.
Except female coming out of the end of the mini DVI to DVI adapter is DVI-D only, not DVI-I. And all of the adapters Apple used to sell, most intelligently, were DVI-I.
Okay.
So they physically don't fit together. There are not enough holes in the female DVI-D to take a DVI-I adapter. Do not fit.
Nice.
Four pins too few. So I was grumpy, but I was like, fair enough. Wander down to the local computer shop and we'll buy an adapter. Stupid, but we'll do that.
Okay.
So down we went, bought a DVI-D to VGA adapter, shoved it into the mini DVI adapter that Apple had supplied us, and absolutely, positively, nothing happened.
Why?
The screen did not detect any signal whatsoever.
Okay. Why?
I still haven't figured that out. So we rang AppleCare.
Okay.
Explained the whole situation, and AppleCare went, oh, clearly the monitor's broke. It's like, well, no.
I don't think so.
It was working just 2 minutes ago on my other Mac Mini, and I'm perfectly happy to try it again. I said, well, maybe it's the adapter. It's like, well, we did just buy it, and it's a it's a brand new adapter. Why would it not work? Well, you'd have to test that. I was like, well, we don't actually have a DVI monitor. If we did, we wouldn't have this problem.
Right, right.
But anyway, there's much grunting and humming and hawing, and they wouldn't believe us, basically. So I went off and did a bit more poking around and eventually rang them back. When I had figured out the differences in the different DVI connectors, I had to explain to the Apple person what the different DVI standards were and how Apple had sold me DVI adapters that were one standard. Now, Apple were selling me DVI adapters that are another standard, so my Apple DVI connector won't connect to my Apple DVI connector. I said, it's ridiculous. Stupid. So I said, but never mind. So clearly what we need is an adapter that goes straight from mini DVI to VGA. And I went, yeah, that's fine. We sell those in the Apple store. You'll have to buy one of those. And I was like, well, I think that's a pretty poor show. Why don't you send me that adapter and I'll send you back this worthless piece of crap you sent me already that isn't compatible with my other adapters.
I was How did they like that? Did you say it like that?
I didn't say it like that. I was very polite. The better half had rang the first time, but that was going nowhere because his temper was going everywhere. So I decided to play it, you know, polite.
Oh, so you were the calm, helpful one in this plot?
I was good cop, yeah. they were going nowhere, and they refused to exchange the adapters. I said, okay, fair enough. Sell me the adapter then. Will you at least overnight it so that we get it? You know, it was Thursday evening. If you overnight it like you do for AppleCare replacements of things, at least we'll have it tomorrow. We'll have the computer for the weekend. No, sorry, can't do that. You have to go onto the Apple store and order it the normal way. It'd be 2 to 3 days till they ship it. So you should have it in about 5 days.
So they didn't give you any help at all?
No, and I actually, at that point, I went, look, this is exceptionally disappointing. And I stressed the word disappointing. And that got a reaction. So she went off. She put me on hold for easily 10 minutes and came back to tell me exactly what she told before. I was like, okay, I don't mind being on hold if you're talking to a supervisor and we're going somewhere here. But I object to being put on hold for that long to come back and tell me to go sod off.
It does tell you that she tried. It tells you that her supervisor was no help at all.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
I mean, unless she went off and had a cigarette or something.
That would really be annoying.
Right.
So eventually I just went, fine, hung up on them. But 10 seconds later, an email pops in. Please review. Please give us feedback on your recent experience with AppleCare. I was like, oh, your timing's fantastic. Cracked the knuckles and let loose.
Oh, gosh. I would not like to be the one on the other end of that.
Yeah, but no, I think it's absolutely pathetic. But in the end, we ordered, I decided to order both a mini DisplayPort to VGA and a mini DVI to VGA in the hope that both of our flat panel VGA monitors would then work at the same time. And, you know, because 20-inch iMac to a 19-inch regular old VGA monitor, not so good. But 20-inch iMac to a brand new Mac Mini with two 19-inch VGA monitors, better.
No, you just called them flat panel. You don't mean flat panel. VGA
flat.
Right. They did make VGA flat panels. That's right. Yeah. I've got one of those. What am I talking about? Okay.
You know, I have a big old CRT here as well, but that's going. That's my standby monitor.
My friend Ron uses it to hold his house down.
Yeah, I'm actually slightly afraid that it might bring my whole computer desk down. But anyway.
And. So?
Yeah, so that worked. So he now has a shiny new Mac Mini, two displays, all working fine, but I was unimpressed in the extreme with Apple.
It does suck some of the fun out of it, doesn't it?
Completely. And I went and had a look at their tech spec, and in tiny, teeny, tiny writing, it says supports VGA brackets adapter sold separately. I thought, yeah, you're not too clear about that. And what they were not clear about at all is the fact that DVI doesn't mean DVI anymore. It means DVI-D only.
Yeah, while you've been talking, I did a search also on Wikipedia on DVI, and I put an image in the show notes that shows you what DVI, DVI-I, DVI-D, DVI-A, what the pinouts are on those.
And you can see DVI-DL for dual link.
Which has
millions and millions of pins.
Okay. Well, what it does illustrate is you can see in DVI-I, it's got every pin possible, so that then you can see what you were saying about that being the female side. Then you could take all the other ones.
Yeah.
What a mess. I think the whole connector thing might just be a financial scam. I think it's a revenue stream, don't you?
I'm not sure. I think it's the fact that they can't quite figure out a decent standard that's actually compatible with stuff. And I'm really hoping that Mini DisplayPort takes off.
Yeah, well, but even with Mini DisplayPort, I bought a Mini DisplayPort to DVI or to VGA so that I could drive my cruddy old analog HP monitor. And then, but then I have to have one for DVI-D for Steve. And then I need, you know, it's just, I've got 28 of these things at 30 True. Bucks a piece. You know, they're starting to add up.
True. The problem is DVI is just physically too big of a connector to expect Apple to put on their teeny tiny products.
Yeah, I suppose. But, you know, percentage wise, it starts to add up. Well, and I guess if they included it, they'd include the wrong one, right?
Well, it used to be the case on the Mac Minis that you would choose your adapter. It was one of the build-to-order options where you get a drop-down, but that's gone.
That would be perfect.
That would be absolutely perfect. I really would not have objected at all if it had been the fact that I had failed to notice that I had to choose my adapter. Right. I would have felt a bit silly. I may have suggested that they make it a bit clearer, but it's just gone.
But instead, they did include one. They just included one that didn't do you any good.
Yeah, they just decided, DVI. Whole world wants DVI. As long as it's DVI-D.
Maybe they don't know they're not all the same. All right, so now the better half set up with his two 20-inch monitors and a brand-new shiny Mac Mini. What did that do for you?
Well, that means that I got to replace my G4 Mac Mini with a G5 iMac, 20-inch.
Now that's good. That's an upgrade
for
you.
Definitely good. It is definitely an upgrade. Came with the machine has a bit of a history. It was bought, it was unboxed on the day Steve Jobs got up on stage and said, "We're going to Intel," which is slightly annoying.
Now, to be fair, though, you did get about 8 months, 6 to 8 months of use of that because they didn't flip the Mac, the iMacs over to Intel for several months because it was the first one they did was the MacBook Pro. So you did get 6 months or so on that, right?
Yeah, it was sometime late in the summer before they actually brought out new iMac. So even if we had known before we ordered, we probably still would have ordered it because, well, the better half's not known for being patient. So he wanted a shiny new Mac, and there was a shiny new Mac going to come, regardless of the fact that they were about to be replaced by Intel's.
There you go. Hence the disgust at 3 entire days to have to wait while you were gone, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So actually, it was Tuesday before we got that adapter, so it was from Thursday till Tuesday we had to wait. With a shiny new machine we couldn't use.
Bummer. I completely understand that. You know, with the new iPhone 3GS coming out, we're going to get ours hopefully on Friday, the day they come out. It's supposed to be delivered from AT&T. But if we miss that by one day, Kyle can't take his to the little trip he's going on, and he will have to wait an entire week for a new phone.
That won't be good.
That's horrible.
So anyway, my G5 arrives, and the first, of course, issue with it is it's in pretty good nick for being the age it is, except that the optical drive is bust, and it's pretty proper bust.
Wait. Is this the same iMac that you put the mini DVD into that time, and the two of you had to shake it
one,
to get it out?
Yeah, that's the one.
Really,
maybe
the optical drive
might not be unrelated.
Okay.
So at the moment, if you stick in a CD, it makes horrible, horrible noises, and then when you spit out the CD, there's a giant gouge sort of taken out in a perfect circle.
Oh,
out of the
nice.
CD. So there's something physically sticking into your CDs that go in there. And then it spins them up and goes... So there's no way my Leopard CD is going in there.
Yeah, I think no.
So I have an external USB CD drive, which we had before anyway, because of the retardedness of DVD regioning. If you buy something on the internet, there's every chance it's going to be region 2 instead of region 1 or whatever. So we actually have a bunch of these external DVD drives, and they're just each in a region.
Okay. That's a good
idea. For data, of course, that doesn't matter at all. So, you know, it works just fine on the machine for data. Great. Except you can't boot off a USB CD drive.
Oh, no.
It doesn't show up at boot time.
Well,
so
what about
I scratched my head for a bit.
Can you put the iMac in FireWire disk mode? The target disk mode?
So what I did was I stuck the DVD into my MacBook Pro, put the MacBook Pro into target disk
mode. That's what I mean, yeah.
Connected the MacBook Pro up to the iMac, held down the option key while the iMac booted, picked the CD drive on my MacBook Pro as the source, and went ahead of the installation. Worked like a champ, except that it's painfully slow. Even just when you hit option, you see a little sort of spinny thing come up as it's scanning for drives, and even it even takes it about a minute or two to see the optical drive on the other machine.
Really?
So for a scary amount of time. I wasn't sure if I was actually going to pick it up. Now, it may only in reality have been 15 seconds, but it felt like forever. I was like, come on, come on, come on, come on, see the drive. And eventually it did.
Refer back to the impatience part we were talking about, right?
Yeah. The actual install was very slow as well, though.
Really?
So, yeah, it took 3 hours, I think.
I wonder why.
Because it was having to go through FireWire to get it at CD, FireWire's, I imagine.
FireWire's fast.
Yeah, but
not as
I'm
fast
not,
as the internal bus would have been, you think?
Somehow it can't possibly have been. It was definitely sluggish. Huh, now, it actually said at 1.5 hours remaining, but it definitely didn't take 5 hours, and it may not even have taken three, but I just let it go and sod it off.
Right.
But it said 3 hours to go when I sod it off.
Oh, okay. So?
It works. The only slight concern I have, which is sort of homework for listeners, I stuck menu meters on it, which, oh, not menu meters, I stuck menu, and it's a pretty noisy machine. Surprisingly noisy for a Mac, so I thought maybe there's something afoot in the wind here. So I stuck on the temperature monitor and the fan speed monitor, and the fans are pretty much maxed out at 3600 RPM constantly, and
oh,
the temperature
really?
Fluctuates between 69 Celsius and 84 Celsius, which is hot.
Yeah.
It's not melt your machine hot,
but hot enough for the fans
cool.
to be on.
Hot enough for the fans to be on continuously and constantly. And I mentioned this on IMP Live yesterday, and the chat room insisted that this particular model, the G5 20-inch iMacs, are known to be noisy beasts with a serious heat problem.
Okay, it was Steve. Oh no, it wasn't a G5. Yeah. Have you checked to see if there's an SMC fan control firmware update thingy for that? Maybe.
Well, if there was, the only thing I'd possibly do would be turn the fans up even more. Even though I think they're possibly at full power already.
Maybe, because if they're logically on because it's hot, yeah.
Yeah, it's not that the fans aren't doing enough. The fans are on.
Because they need to be.
Because they need to be, yeah. So I don't think there's anything to tweak here.
Okay.
It's just clearly those G5s put out a lot of heat, and those G5s are not very good at losing that heat.
Yeah, I know that.
Well, I suppose the cramped form factor.
That definitely has always been an issue since the G5 towers were water-cooled, or liquid-cooled, I should say. Steve's old G5 weighs about 700 pounds, I think.
Oh. Yeah, they never made laptops or portable G5s because they just could not get the heat out of them without frying your legs off.
Right. So, I was reading up, I was looking in Mac Tracker for the 20-inch mm-hmm. iMac, and it says you can only do video mirroring only with this iMac. Is that right? That you can't add a second monitor?
And whatever display port is on the back of it is a mini something or other, and I'm not going down that adapter route again. Besides,
well, I have 26 adapters. One of them in here, I bet, works with that machine.
Possibly. But both are flat panel monitors are now on the iMac, or it's on the Mac Mini, so there's no spare monitor anyway, and there's no way I'm connecting up that CRT.
Why? Because you can't pay the power bill if you do?
I just don't want that giant big heat source. I don't want to have to look at it. I don't want to bust my eyes looking at it. I have, at the moment, my old Mac Mini is hooked up to it while I transfer off my files and stuff.
Okay.
But it's painful.
Now, what are you going to do with the old Mac Mini? Are you going to sell that?
I am, actually. I have a buyer lined up.
Oh, that's good. That helps reduce the cost. Well, no, we talked about how much the Macs are still worth, right?
Yeah, well, no, a friend of mine, he's never had a Mac, and he's pretty sure he wants to buy a MacBook probably around about the end of the year time frame. But in the meantime, he'd like to get to know the Mac. And I was like, well, you know, the little Mac Mini, it's not going to give you state-of-the-art feeling for the Mac, but it'll give you some idea what the Mac's all about.
Right, and if he's got a keyboard and mouse and a monitor,
yeah,
he's good to go.
He has a PC that's given him nothing but trouble, a home-built PC, and it just... the bizarrest of things happen. You plug in a USB drive and the machine crashes and stuff like that.
Nice.
Or what was the other one? Yeah, every time he plugs in the USB, what was it? He plugs in a thumb drive and his internet goes out because the USB drive for the dongle stops working. It's the most bizarre whack-a-mole sort of carry-on.
Oh, you know, I spend so much time now on Windows during the day that I don't put anything past Windows. My Windows box has gotten into nice mode where I always put it to sleep when I leave the room because I want to, you know, save energy and that sort of thing. And
sure.
9 times out of 10, it just goes, okay, go to sleep. And I come back and I hit power and it wakes up and everything's fine. And a couple of days ago, I told it to go to sleep and it instantly, as I hit that button, went to a black screen saying, Windows has shut down abnormally. It's like, no, I didn't say to shut down. I said to go to sleep, you know? I've had 2 blue screens of death on that. Oh, and when it did that that hard crash, it ended up ruining my mail client. I had to have that reloaded, which, of course, borked up all my settings, and it just, ah, every day.
No, it's when you mention the sleep, you know, my parents, we've already talked about my parents getting a new iMac. One of the things that really surprised Dad was when I said, just put it to sleep. But when I did that on Windows, we don't really know what's going to happen next. I was like, it doesn't matter. You're not on Windows anymore. Just put it to sleep. And he's gotten into this habit now, but it was one of those sort of double-take moments. Do what?
Definitely. Well, trust you know, XP was definitely very unreliable with that. But the previous Vista machine I had for about a year and a half was fine. I could put it to sleep anytime. Nothing ever went wrong with it. Now it's a new one, brand new, state-of-the-art, top of the line. This one crashes. There and I think the most annoying thing is what happens when you plug in a monitor. So I plug it into a monitor in my office, and then I need to unplug it and go to another office, and I plug in a different monitor. I have to, every single time, before I unplug it, I have to go into display preferences, tell it to make the laptop monitor be the main monitor, and tell it to stop looking at the other monitor. Because if I simply unplug it, it has no clue that that monitor's not still there. So all of the controls are on this invisible monitor when I get to the other end. If I forget, I have to reboot the machine. And when I come back to my office and I plug it back in, and I have to tell it again, go, here's a monitor, you know, I plug something in and here's where it is. And then I have to tell it, no, you're supposed to be in charge. And then I have to set the resolution. And for some reason it decides that the laptop resolution is the same as the monitor resolution, which is not the same. So I have to go through the settings twice, once to start it up and once to fix it so it's the right resolution every single time.
That just drives you potty, whereas on the Mac, you just plug it in and it restarts its desktop-y thing.
Yeah, and it goes,
just goes to blue for a second.
Here's your monitor.
And then it goes, you have one here and one here, so I'll just spread everything out across those two, and then you plug it out and it goes, oh, that one's gone, I'll put it all back here.
I did have trouble last weekend, though, with it, where I was plug and unplug my external monitor, and I take it downstairs. I take the big monitor downstairs for some work I'm doing with some clients, and... It got into this weird hinky mode where it wouldn't obey what I was telling it to do as far as arrangement, because I needed it to be on the right instead of the left or whatever, and it would leave one of the monitors with a red box around it. It was very strange. And you know how you drag the little white menu bar back and forth to decide which one's in charge? It had 2 of them, one of them floating in midair.
Ooh.
Yeah, it got really... I even rebooted, and that didn't fix it, so...
Oh, it did tie itself into a knot.
That was during the Mercury retrograde that BJ Wendland told me about, where my you know, my iPod Nano died, my iPhone died, my
general equipment failure.
Everything blew up on me, and my BlackBerry died, and then of course my I got that blue screen of death on that same day with my PC. By the way, all 4 devices are fine now. Last night, Ron took my iPod Nano back to his house and plugged it in, charged it up, and it's fine. I tried that. It didn't work for me. But hopefully
maybe something screwy with your power.
Yeah, I wondered about it. I thought maybe I'd unplugged that poor Nano and plugged it back in too many times, because I was unplugging and plugging in the dock connector probably 8 times a day.
Yowzers, why?
Well, when I get out of the car, I put my Nano headphone on with my Lanyard headphones, and I walk into the office, and then when I get in the car in the morning, I would plug it into the car adapter, which is a dock connector. Then I would unplug it, put it into the Lanyard headphones, entertain myself on my walk into the office. Then if I was walking around, I'd do it there. But then I come out to go to the gym, I plug it back into the car. I get to the gym, I unplug it, plug it back into the Lanyard headphones to walk into the gym. So on and off all day long. So I thought maybe I pissed it off, but I don't know. He says it's happy at his house, so we'll see.
That's a strange one.
Hey, well, I know we had one other thing we keep saying maybe we'll have time for, but I do want to have you talk about it. You had some serious retro fun.
Yeah, this was in the post-show after we were recording IMP Live, and I was just sort of poking around on my desk, as one does. And I was like, oh, look, a USB lead. I wonder where this leads to. follow it, and out pops a dock with Palm written on it.
Ah.
Hang on. If the dock for my old visor is here, my old visor must be somewhere close by.
This is a handspring
visor?
And indeed
visor? It was. Handspring visor. So I found it, and I hit the power button, and of course absolutely nothing happened, because the thing hadn't been used in a decade at least. But turned around the back, and it has a little flappy door, and it, sure enough, inside were regular AAA batteries. Well, I have loads of those spare, because that's what my mouse uses, so I always have loads of them in the house, because I hate being without a mouse for a weekend. So I stuck in the batteries, hit the on button, and immediately it went, "Hello! Welcome to your new visor. Please tap the top left corner to calibrate your screen."
Oh, then bottom I missed that.
Then the center.
Oh, I missed that. And so was it kind of an old home week feeling?
It was very strange, actually, but it's working. And strangely enough, I can actually use my finger.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, I think you could do it with your fingernail. Yeah.
Oh, even just my big clunky finger, assuming I don't want to be in any way accurate. But it works. It's all here. And I even tried to sync it to the Mac, but unfortunately the last version of HotSync that supported the visor needs OS 9.
Oh, phooey. You know, phooey. You brought this up, and that same week that you brought it up to me, I think it was 2 weeks ago, was I had four separate people mention to me how much they miss their old Palm Pilots. And there was something about it that was just amazing. And it really is sad that they never upgraded the Palm OS and never came out with good new devices on it. That really was a shame.
As far as I'm concerned, I have the perfect Palm Pilot. It's called the iPhone.
Well,
no, seriously.
Oh, yeah. No, I was trying to convince my friend Diane, who was one of the people saying she missed her Palm 5, was saying that's why you need an iPhone or an iPod Touch
Absolutely.
For her. And she says, "No, I can't type on that." It's like, well, wait a minute. You learned graffiti with a stylus.
Graffiti?
Yeah, exactly. Well, she has fingernails. And I said, yeah, you just use the pads of your fingers. It's not like your fingernails curl on a circle.
You don't have to stab it. Yeah, you don't have to stab the screen. You just use the bottom of your finger.
Yeah, she's convinced it's impossible. If you can, she could never use it.
If you can touch the table with your finger, then your nails aren't too long to use.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, really what was wrong with these devices, I think, were just a little too far ahead of themselves. Because they're actually not small enough to fit in your pocket, which is why my one never got as much use as it should have. Mm. It was always in my bag, but it was never in my pocket.
Okay.
And that's not the same thing. Because, you know, I'd go in, my backpack goes most places I go, but it doesn't go everywhere I go, whereas my pocket does. I'm rarely out in public without trousers.
Rarely.
I wouldn't put it in my swimming togs if I ever do go swimming, if the weather's ever good enough. But no, so that was one of the things. And the other is the fact that it couldn't communicate on its own. That its only connection to the world was that stupid USB lead into your computer. And that until you were back at your computer, it was completely isolated, a little island.
Yeah, I don't think I would call that ahead of its time, though. I think for its time, it was a spectacular device. I mean, the main thing to me was that all of my information was in two places. I had a constant backup of my data. That was huge to me, because I used to carry around a gigantic paper planner that weighed, 16 pounds. Yeah. And I remember my friend Eric telling me, "Hey, you got to try this Palm thing." And I was like, "What problem does that solve? You know, I've got all my contacts. I've got all my appointments. I've got this great, I've got shelves of paper of my old years of this and everything," which of course is not searchable. It's not backed up. And one day somebody borrowed my planner. They took it off my desk. I had a heart failure. I had nothing.
You didn't know where you were.
No, I didn't know what
today?
I was doing. Yeah.
Where am I meant to be? Who am I meant to talk to?
Exactly.
Who are you?
Who are you? Exactly. So, I mean, when the Palm came into my life, it was like, oh, man, now I get what this is. And I didn't see forward to the future of what it could be connected back then. I saw that it was an amazing thing for its time.
No, it was the very first day Steve showed the iPhone. I remember going, "This is like the Palm, only this is going to work."
Yeah.
It was really revolutionary. And it's in many ways it's quite quaint, because I can genuinely individually count the pixels on this display, because the letters are actually one pixel wide.
Nice. That's a good looking device there. Oh, you mentioned
monochrome.
Talking about pockets, though, I did want to say that I'm in the opposite camp. I don't have pockets in any of my clothes. I don't have pockets, but I always have a purse with me, which is why my Palm was always with me, ready and waiting for a bottle of water to be poured on it in my purse. Oh, that's probably enough of old home week, Bart. We should probably wind up the show here.
Indeedy. Business as usual next week, I believe, at least from my end.
Yeah, actually.
Business as usual your end?
Yeah, I think we'll be in good shape.
Excellent. Okay, until then, happy computing.
Well, that's going to wind things up for tonight. I hope you have a fantastic week. And while you're enjoying yourself, drop me an email at allison@podfeet.com with comments, questions, especially the dumb ones. I like those. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, too, at twitter.com/podfeet. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.